Blog Talk Radio.
Today is May 9th. It's Monday, May 9th, 2016, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy, happy, happy Monday to you. And if you just happen to be a mom on any level, I am sending a salute out to you for doing that job. Yes, indeed. I hope you had a great day yesterday, celebrating or chillaxing or both. You know, I think it was a do-what-you-want-to-do kind of day. So to all you queens and princesses, dolls and divas who are in mom mode, keep up the good work. Yes, that's what you got to do. I know it, you know, may not be easy some days, but being a mom is truly a labor of love, as you already know. And you know what? There are so many ways to get it done. Yes, for sure. And my guest today certainly knows that fact to be true. Yep, she's been dubbed a super mom. That's quite a category, you know, for the inspiring work that she's doing on the social front with her organization, the Being Beautiful Foundation. And it's an organization that assists in the development and placement of at-risk youth, isn't that wonderful, into foster homes. She's shining bright in that arena as well as in the love and joy she shares inside of her own home. So I'm so pleased to have her as my guest today. She's Valerie Crabb, founder of the Being Beautiful Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
And how are you today?
I am totally excited, uber excited. Great Mother's Day, and just happy to be on here with the amazing Silver Ray.
Well, thank you so much. How was your Mother's Day? Give us a little capsule view.
Oh, God, a house full of foster kids, adopted kids, just kids, period. Everyone surrounding me, watching movies. Actually, you know what? They cooked dinner on the deck, on the grills. Everybody cooked themselves. It was so amazing to watch.
So you didn't have to cook yesterday?
I did not have to cook. And when they were asking me to check the burgers and the hot dogs, I said, wait a second, it's Mother's Day.
So I want to know, tell the truth, did you have any time just to sit and just relax and watch all the happenings?
You know what? It freaked me out to see my husband and his cousin in the kitchen, two males, and nine kids, and they tore up the kitchen. It was so hard for me not to just chime in and start cleaning. Whenever I tried to, they say, we got it. But everything was a mess. It was like
an
Ajax commercial.
Again?
Actually, they did. I went down this morning, and I was dreading it. I actually went down to clean up. It was already done, spick and span.
Oh, boy, you've got a great team.
Beautiful.
You've taught them well. You've taught them
beautiful.
Well.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you had such a wonderful day that you could enjoy, especially with all of the effort that you put into doing what you do. You know, I just want to take some time to mention, and you can chime in with this, that we met on Facebook, and it was through the graciousness of Mr. Jerry Alex Smith, who is the media mind behind ICE and 30, which is an organization or a movement, I really want to call it, that was established to create collaborations that benefit organizations like yours. So you want to chime in a little bit and tell us about your connection?
And Facebook is such an amazing platform. Just using it for the positivity of connections and meeting him on Facebook, he reached out to me and he explained his vision, and I totally fell in love with the vision, which is great for charities, having that connection to have other eyes looking over you as a charity, and you don't feel like you're by yourself. So that's how we came together. And I'm very grateful and thankful for ICE and 30, and I'm Jerry Alex Smith. Amazing, amazing platform that he's building with his team.
Exactly. For any of you that are interested in knowing more about any opportunities with ISIN 30, all you have to do is look on Facebook or Google it. There's information there that may just offer you an opportunity to get involved. It is an amazing thing that's going on, and it's being spearheaded again by Mr. Jerry Alex Smith, and it's very exciting. I'm glad to be one of the people that he tapped on the shoulder to. But let's get back to you now. Boy, there's so much to talk about. So we're going to make sure we try to get all of this information in for those who want to hear about your story and how they might potentially get involved in hands-on in what you do as well. Now, I know there's a backdrop story, your beginnings in foster care, and it's a lovely story. So why don't you get us started there, Valerie?
I actually, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to actually adopt a Chinese little girl, black little girl, and a white little girl, United Nations, what my mother would always call it. And that stayed in the back of my mind. And I do believe it was not growing up too fast. When I was 16, I was still playing with Barbie when my peers were doing other things. And I just dreamed so much through the dolls on what I would want to do when I got older. But I always wanted to adopt a little girl. And the dream came to fruition one day back in 2006. I adopted our first daughter, Angela. And she was actually therapeutic foster care, which is children that are on medication. They're older. There are a lot of issues with these children. And most of them actually belong in group homes. So I just learned everything I could through basic foster care, but once she came home with us, it was very, very difficult with both of us getting used to each other. And I just fell in love with this little girl, everything about her. From that moment on, we adopted her, my husband and I, and she wanted a little sister, and we got Audelia. But before we got Audelia, the trials and tribulations that Angie and I went through, we just had to adjust to one another.
I'm sure it is quite an adjustment, probably even more on the, on the child's part to get adjusted to a new home and family and personalities, because some of them have been in so many environments that, not all of them are loving or welcoming or comfortable in all of that. They just are filling a temporary need often. So I know that that's not the case in what you're doing or trying to help create for these children. So from that, can you tell us how it all became a cause for you and an actual establishing the Being Beautiful Foundation?
It actually, the first year Angela was with me, I couldn't understand why is this little girl pushing me aside? Why is she trying to get me to get rid of her? Because she would always say, you're going to get rid of me, you're going to get rid of me. If I would say, did you do your homework, and she didn't do it, and I would have to have her go in her room to do her homework, she took that as a punishment. So she would tear up her room, constantly destroy her room that my mother and I put together for her back in 2006. But the ironic part of the whole thing, when we first started, my mom was going to be my support. And when I went to visit Angie with her team, they saw that I was African American and she was Caucasian, and they didn't want to give her to me at all. And that was very difficult, so I wasn't going to do it. And my mom kept telling me, you're going to get this little girl, you're going to be the best mom to her. And I didn't believe it. And 2 hours after my mother made that comment, she passed away in her sleep. And I got a phone call about 6 hours later from the agency asking me if I still want Angie because she wasn't doing very well. My mom knew. She knew, and she was right. And Angie came to our home right after that. So looking at the trials and everything that I had to deal with, because she went through 10 foster homes, so that's 10 different parents, right. And she tried to commit suicide maybe 5 times. So once I got her, I just would not give up on her. And
I know you have a funny story at the beginning when you were just trying to connect with her and gain her trust in a small
mm-hmm.
way to start you guys off on the same, you know, in the same direction. You want to share that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Within this year, Angie had a habit of tearing up her room. And if I could keep her out of the room, it would have been just so much better because I knew I couldn't say, go to your room. Because if I say, go to your room, you would hear her in there tearing up her room. You would hear the banging, the booming, and the screaming. And we're taught in training, leave them alone. Well, I did that. I left her alone. The third time, I left her alone. I left her alone. Then I would have to clean up the room for her. Well, the last time that she destroyed her room, she cut up my mother's blankets that I gave her. And that's when I went in the room. And when I saw that, I tore up the room with her. And she stopped. I was throwing everything out in the hallway. So you don't want this? Fine. Here, let's get rid of everything. We'll get rid of everything. And she looked at me and said, you're really weird. And I said, but I love you. I love you, Angie. And no matter what you do, I'm not going to get rid of you. She believed me. Everything clicked. And
so
I was
beautiful.
Able to
it's so awesome.
Turn the doorknob. Everything clicked.
That is amazing. Can you just share, I mean, what made you, what clicked in your mind? Were you a little bit upset and that's why you did it? Or did you just think, maybe this will work if I can get on the same page with her?
No. You know what? The advice from training to let them just do it, that was wrong advice.
It wasn't
because,
working.
No, it didn't work. She was just, I started not replacing anything in the room that she would destroy. And I'm like, I wouldn't do it to my biological children, which I have three. Why am I allowing this for her to do this? What would I do? So when I went into the room and saw that she cut up my mother's blankets, I was so hurt. I started crying. My reaction was fine. We're going to throw all this stuff out of the house. So you're going to have nothing in here but a bed, but you're not going anywhere. So I was hurt. I was upset. And I felt better, believe it or not, throwing this stuff over the banister. Because I had to show her that no matter what you do, if you're in the room just with a bed, that's on you, but you're not going anywhere. But I'm fed up with it. But I think Angie was used to the discipline with her other foster parents was
right.
Not very good. They got rid of her.
Right, right. Well,
and
you know, that was a really smart way of showing some tough love.
It was. It really, really was. And at that point, I didn't care. I just knew she wasn't going anywhere. She was going to have a consequence for it. But we didn't even get to the consequence because we both broke down and started crying. And that's when she said, you really do love me, don't you? I said, yes, I do, but you're punishing me.
Well, it certainly has worked out. And as I was asking you a couple of minutes ago, so you really had embraced this whole idea of fostering and needed to take it to another level.
Yes.
So you do this.
That,
this is your full-time effort now.
This is my full-time job, my full-time life. This is my life. And from that experience, I just felt like the Lord put it on my heart. You have to take this to the next level. I want you to do more. And then we got Odelia. Odelia is 14 now. She's Spanish. And I just received another little girl. Her name is Nasira. She's 16. And that was a challenge because when I received Angie and Odelia, they were little, 8 and 5, but Nasira was 16. And
mm-hmm.
Once we received Nasira, that's when we decided, you know what, let's start a foundation to reach out for these kids, not just to advocate for foster parents, but we need to change foster care. I want to bring these kids home.
Right. Well, you know, that brings me to my next question, Valerie, and that is, I know there had to be some questions in your mind. I know you didn't just take a blind leap of faith to become a foster parent. What kinds of questions did you have, and what kinds of questions do you know of the people who may be considering it, potential foster parents? What kinds of questions are they asking that you might be able to answer?
The questions that I normally get, I believe it or not, because of therapeutic foster care, I get a lot of questions about, I know of a girl who's a teenager who's being abused. I know of a young boy who's with his parents and they're both alcoholics and they're moving into a shelter. I get a lot of those questions because of the type of kids that I work with, but normally it's how long does it take to become a foster parent? What do I have to do to become a foster parent? The basic questions like that.
Mm-hmm. Are there any fears that the potential parents have, or hesitancies that they might not want to do it? Certainly based on some of the experiences that you have described, may be commonplace in some children.
Everybody's afraid of the older kids, and which is understandable because they're set in their ways. These kids most likely have been through 5 foster homes or more. There's a lot of abuse that has happened, neglect. They're angry, they're bitter, and there's behavioral issues. A lot of them are on medication. So I think the biggest thing is I don't want an older child. Everybody wants babies. Everybody wants the toddlers. But the system is overcrowded with preteens and teenagers. And that's what I hear. But when they see that I'm doing it as an example, some of them will come to our home and they see it. And that I didn't quit. And these kids are so amazing now. It tempts them to say, well, you know what? If I can have your support, then I'll try it.
Yes. And, you know, it's so interesting that you brought up the older kids, because I've had the opportunity some years ago to work directly with at-risk kids. And
wow,
it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing how, when they understand that you really love them and that they can trust you, it creates a whole new platform for them to deal with you. And when they start building on that month after month and year after year, they turn into some wonderful, wonderful products of life. And you can, you just beam with pride for knowing you had a little part in making happen.
They're very loyal.
They do.
They're very desperate. Mm-hmm. And these children, these teens, preteens, if you don't give up on them, they see it. But the biggest thing is that you brought them into your home. They are so grateful. They are so thankful. And they show it. And when they love on you, they love on you so hard that it feels to them, it feels like you've given birth to them. They're yours.
Well, you seem to have a really strong love conquers all type of philosophy. Have you had any particular challenges that kind of pushed that to the edge for you?
When you first get these kids, it feels like no matter what you do, you have that honeymoon phase. I was afraid of the honeymoon phase. I had to learn the hard way. When they first get here, it's like Disneyland to them. And then you see the change in their behavior. I'm not kidding you, within 30 days. And what I've learned with the 3 that I got, I don't overly get excited anymore. Like, oh, this is going to be great. I wait for the challenges. And in the beginning, I think I cried every night because I felt like I was doing something wrong. And the tears were just constantly, I would do a lot of praying and crying, and my husband would say, just keep doing what you're doing. And then you really do want to give up because they're not appreciative in the beginning because they don't trust you. Once I started thinking the way they were thinking, I didn't feel let down, and I think that was the thing, is foster parents feel like they're not doing enough, and we give up. We tend to give up.
Yes. Well, it sounds like you learned to address the basic needs in them and understand
mm-hmm.
where they're coming from, and that's mm-hmm. got to be the formula. You know, the patience,
mm-hmm.
the love,
mm-hmm.
the you know, not giving up is what they need.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can attest to the fact that it just makes the greater difference in what, you know, again,
mm-hmm.
turning them around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. What would you say to individuals to inspire and encourage them to consider foster care, since they're, you said the system's overloaded? So what would you say to anybody listening about considering taking in a child?
If there's someone listening right now, and maybe a young woman, and maybe it's a father who's by himself and has a space, an apartment. A lot of people think, I live in an apartment, I can't do it. You can. If you have that extra bedroom, if you just take in one. So I always think of that the thought in my head with a stadium that's full of people, patrons watching the baseball game. If you look at how full that stadium, if one parent takes just one child into their home, look into it, get your resources, make your phone calls, interview, meet the child, spend time with them, and just give it a chance. If it's a thought, if it's something that you, I think I might, look into it. And that's what I did.
Well, you should also mention this, Valerie, because you and your husband already had quite a family. So there may be people who are just like you, who have families and would like to, you know, increase those numbers and give themselves an opportunity to parent foster kids.
Mm-hmm.
So speak to that, because you and your husband did this together.
Yeah, we did it together, and between the both of us, I had three, he had three. We were literally the Brady Bunch. It was three boys and three girls. And even though it's something that I've always wanted to do, once my biological kids hit teenage years, I had room for one, just one. So that's how we started. So not even having the six stopped me. You know, some people could say, well, I have a house full of kids, I can't take anymore. If it's in your heart and you have a desire to give back or a desire to help and serve, and if it's only just for one because you already have children, when you bring that child into the home with existing children of your own, the dynamics of what they see the foster youth go through, it changes your own kids for the better to be more appreciative.
That's really wonderful.
They become very thankful, very thankful, because they looked at everything that Angela did not have that our kids did have. So when they would see Angie have used clothes and sneakers and shoes that were run down, my daughter looked at that and said, here, she can have this, or she can. It creates a giving for your own children.
Yeah, I'm sure there are many, many teachable moments with that. So
let's share
with everybody a couple of things about Being Beautiful Foundation and where they can reach out to you, Valerie.
Oh, I love our foundation. BeingBeautifulFoundation.org is our website. And you can reach us through that. You can reach me on Facebook under Valerie Crabb. That our foundation, we're actually going to be opening up 10 homes within the next 2 years, like we're doing now. Our home where I live now is the model, which is proven, is successful, because Angie's in LaSalle College now. She's on the dean's list, and Audelia is on a roll, Nasir is on a roll. And so we're receiving 6 more girls next month. And so the goal for the foundation is to pull these kids out of the congregate care in group homes and bring them into a residential living.
Mm-hmm. Quickly mention, too, what you did in your own home to accommodate. You mentioned to me that you redid your
mm-hmm.
rooms with bunk beds and things like that. Just quickly share that.
Yes, we actually received a grant from the Phillies, and when we decided, we got our 501c3, became licensed to be a 3800 program which is to act like the group homes but residential, we had to buy like 9 or 8 dressers and 2 sets of bunk beds in every room, and we had 6 bedrooms. So we literally modified every room to fit for teenagers. Even if they weren't here, the kids at the time weren't even here, and we did it anyway because my older kids were grown and gone.
Well, I tell you what, you've done an amazing job, and I can understand why you got dubbed the super mom, because it takes some real special people to do what you're doing. I was visualizing so much of what you were talking about and thinking, oh, boy, no wonder they said she's a super mom and she got on national TV. Because she is really
something. Surprised. I was like, so I'm not no super mom. And when
that sounds like it to me.
Thank you.
Listen, I want to ask you a question before we close. Mm-hmm. Do you have any kind of special mommy tip or tips for us before we wrap up the conversation?
You know what? I think I get that question a lot. And the biggest thing I always say, when you go to the door to open up a door with these kids, even with your biological kids, no matter what's going on in their lives, what's going on in high school, school, homework, their peers, we have a tendency of getting to the knob and then something bad happens or traumatic that as parents we turn around and go the opposite way. We may give up. We may turn in our 30-day notice for foster parents. Don't walk away from that knob. And I think a lot of foster parents that I have met, even permanent legal custody parents, which is called PLC, they go through so much as a mom, and when you get to that door, you're right at the doorknob. All you have to do is turn that knob, and that child, whether biological or foster, is standing right there for you to hug them and tell them you love them. And that's the difference, is not giving up because you're so close, you're at the doorknob. And I refuse to, no matter what I go through, I will not turn away. I'm close to the doorknob. Once I open it, that moment will happen where they see that I love them unconditionally and I'm not going to let them go.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a metaphor for so many mommy moments. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I also appreciate you being my guest today and definitely just tell you how excited, proud of you I am that you have embraced such an important mission. And I wish you very much continued success with all you're doing and keep spreading that love. You're a tremendous, tremendous role model. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for talking with me today. Having me.
You are so welcome. I hope you have an amazing day. I'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. And thank all of you, too, for tuning in today. I appreciate you. I hope you enjoyed that inspiring conversation with Valerie Crabb. And you can reach out to her at the beingbeautifulfoundation.org, beingbeautifulfoundation, spelled out, .org, if you would like some information on foster care. What a wonderful opportunity that could be for you and your family and a child who is in need of a home and love and parenting. And I'm just going to mention, too, I will be back here again next week, next Monday, with another show for you. And I'm hoping that you will mark your calendars for that, and even be more fun for me if you would mention it with your Facebook communities, your Twitter, and people like that, because not everybody knows. So you can help them know that I'm trying to bring some powerful and positive educational and inspiring, empowering information to them each and every week. I hope you have an amazing day. I look forward to talking to you next time. In the meantime, be good, be blessed, and be awesome.